The following is intended solely for the use of those with a sense of adventure.
I'm shaking the dust of this town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world.
This is Travel with Hawkeye. Here's your host, Mark Hawkeye Lewis.
We have two very diverse guests. And when I say diverse, I mean guests that really are very different from each other. But I'm so excited to put them together on the podcast today. One of my favorite guys is Phil Kogan, host of The Amazing Race. We've had him on the podcast before, and I've had him on the travel show also multiple times. But he's got an interesting project right now with the Smithsonian Channel called Flying High with Phil Kogan. And it's a kind of a travelogue of New Zealand, which is one of the most fascinating countries on the planet. But it really delves more into the people and the interesting characters of New Zealand. We're going to talk to Phil in just a few moments here. But we're going to start off the podcast today from the Unclaimed Baggage Center from Scottsboro, Alabama, Brenda Cantrell. Good morning, Brenda.
Good morning.
I am so excited to talk to you this morning because this has been on my bucket list to visit the lost luggage capital of the world for a long time. I heard about it in a news story many years ago. I think maybe like in the 80s. You've been around for a long time, haven't you?
Oh, we have since 1970.
Okay. So I heard it on like a news story a long time ago, and I've always wanted to visit. And then when I got this opportunity to talk to you, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not going to pass this up. So first of all, let's start by telling you, everybody, what it is, that where you work and where this is that people can go visit this.
Well, we are talking about Unclaimed Baggage Center, and we are located in Scottsboro, Alabama. It's the northeast corner of the state, and it's the only place in America where you can shop for unclaimed baggage from the airlines.
Now, for someone who just is lost here, explain what is unclaimed baggage, and then I have a follow-up question to that. I mean, that's pretty obvious, but in case you just can't figure it out.
Well, you know, if you've ever flown and your bag's been mishandled, more than likely you got it back, you know, on a delayed flight or, you know, within 24 hours. But airlines actually spend up to 90 days trying to reunite bags with their owners, and that's checked baggage. And over 99.9% of the time, those bags are successfully returned to their owners. But that very small fraction of a percent that remains unclaimed, we step in and purchase through our exclusive contracts and go around the country and pick them up and bring them back to our facility in Scottsboro, where we unpack them on a daily basis. We sort through things for, you know, obviously we throw a lot of stuff away, we recycle things, we launder all the clothes, we price things, and we stock them in our retail store.
And I assume also you sell the luggage, too?
Yes, we do. Now, keep in mind, we only sell the best of the best, and there's a lot of beat-up luggage out there, so we, you know, find other avenues for those, you know, and try to keep them out of the landfill as best we can. We try to give everything a second life, whether it's repurchase or donation, you know, repurposing somehow. But, yes, we do sell luggage.
And this is a pretty big store, too. It's 4,000 square feet. Compare that to, like, the size of a Walmart? Is that the size of a Walmart?
I think Walmarts are probably closer to, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand square feet.
Okay.
Our store, you know, 40,000-50,000 square feet, and we cover a city block. So, you know, I mean, you're not going to miss us when you're driving down the road.
Okay, now, I got to ask a couple questions here. First of all, has it ever happened that someone has gone into your store and found something that they lost?
Not intentionally. It's a really funny story. This has probably been about 10 years ago, but it's the only documented case that we have. There might, you know, be some other stories out there. But a gentleman had come in his first time shopping at the store and bought a pair of ski boots that looked like something his wife, you know, could wear. And he took them back to Georgia, and she said these looked really familiar. She lifted up the tongue of the boot, and there was her maiden name. And those were her boots that she had lost on a previous trip and had received settlement, you know, some type of insurance settlement from the airline. And then he bought back her favorite boots for $45.
Fantastic. Okay, now, we know that you have luggage there and clothes because that's what most people pack. But what kind of other items that most people wouldn't think about are in the Unclaimed Baggage Center?
Let me tell you, electronics in the last, you know, 6-8 years have just really skyrocketed. And interestingly enough, we also buy things that are left on the plane, the carry-on items. And those are not covered by the airline because, you know, you as the passenger obviously left that in onto your responsibility.
Yeah.
And so you think about not just carry-on bags, but laptops and iPads and headphones and kids' games and, of course, we get blankets and neck pillows and, you know, jackets and things like that. But electronics, like crazy, we get them. Jewelry, we get lots of jewelry, impressive jewelry. I'm not just talking about, you know, run down the street to the local store and get it. We have a $40,000 bracelet in our store right now. That's the appraisal value. and we sell the fine jewelry at highest appraisal value. So you can get it for the bargain price today of about $21,000.
Wow. Now, I would think that like a laptop or an iPhone, that might be easy to trace whose it is.
Well, actually, it's not as easy as you would think. I mean, in particular with an iPhone, with all the security features that go on them now, you can't, nobody can bypass it except the owner, you know, the law.
Yeah.
But again, it's not the airline's responsibility on laptops and things like that that are left on the plane. I mean, they'll do what they can. And some airlines do offer a service for the lost and found type item. But for the most part, those things, you know, are securely locked. And we go through a Department of Defense protocol to clear all the contents and, you know, and then get ready to sell.
Okay. Now, Scottsboro, Alabama, I assume that's not the biggest city in Alabama.
I think you would be correct in that assumption.
I have two questions about Scottsboro. One, is this like a tourist destination? Because I would go out of my way to stop here.
Well, there's a lot of people that go out of their way to come see us. We're one of the top attractions in the state of Alabama. I just reported our numbers to the tourism department for 2015, and we had nearly, as normal, nearly a million visitors that came to our store. I mean, here's the thing. The town is about 15,000 people. We're tucked right into the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains with the Tennessee River and Lake Gunnersville, and just this mountainous scene. And it's just beautiful in its own right. And people come here, you know, to fish and to do water sports. But I would absolutely say the biggest draw to this part of the state is Unclaimed Baggage Center.
Okay. Now, I have to think, what is it like to be a merchant in Scottsboro, Alabama, when you have this incredible array of electronics and clothes and luggage at the Unclaimed Baggage Center? What is it for like the other merchants in your town?
Well, let me tell you, we have a lot of antique stores and thrift stores because they know that people are coming here to shop for deals and they get on the bandwagon.
I understand. Well, what's some of the most unusual things that have been that have ended up at the Unclaimed Baggage Center in Scottsboro, Alabama?
Well, we've had several suits of armor, full suits of armor.
Are you serious?
Yes, we have. We've had ones that are like the medieval ones, those that look like they're from somewhere in Asia. We get all kinds of interesting musical instruments from all over the world that we actually have to research. We have to research a lot of things that we have no idea what they are. I mean, of course, we have contracts with domestic airlines, but we get a lot of international items as well.
Sure.
You know. We get taxidermied items. We have, you know, snake skins. We have deer hanging on the wall. We have moose antlers. We had a live rattlesnake at one point in time.
Wow.
Thankfully, we haven't had any more of those over the years. You know, one of the things that people are excited about right now, just because of recent news, is the movie Labyrinth. That was a Jim Henson production. And in that movie was the character Hoggle. And with David Bowie's passing, it's kind of brought, you know, his acting career back to the light. And there's quite a cult following for this movie Labyrinth that really took off well after the movie was released. It was, you know, it's just kind of a growing thing. But we have the actual puppet, Hoggle, that was made for the movie Labyrinth. It came to us not long after the movie wrapped, and we've had him in our possession for almost 30 years. And, of course, technology and tracing is night and day different from what it was, you know, all those years ago. And the Henson Company knows that we have him. They know that we take care of him. He is very well cared for, but he's actually on display in our museum. So, you know, movie props, if you will. But there's people that want to come see Hoggle. They make the trip to come see Hoggle and have their picture made with him.
There's a movie, a museum also?
Yes. We have a museum when you first walk into the store, and then we kind of extend that feel all around the shopping experience while you're there. We have what we call our found treasures on display all throughout the store, so it takes you from one end to the other while you're shopping. You know, you could say that we are a retail store with a museum, but we could also say we are a museum with the world's largest gift shop.
Now, I have to ask this question. When the employees, when stuff comes through, okay, is there anything that, like, the employees are so excited about that it never makes it onto the floor?
Oh, I mean, of course, there's things that we have to sort through. And like I said, there's things that we throw away. We are a family-friendly store. We do come across, you know, illegal drugs and things of that nature. And we immediately have very tight procedures that get those into the hands of the proper authorities to destroy those. So obviously those aren't going to make it to the sales floor.
Yeah.
But we want our customers, our guests, to experience what we get to experience when we see these items. And so very few things don't make it to the sales floor in that respect. Some of the neat, you know, we might hold on to the occasional unusual item that we might display in our found treasures. But for the most part, you know, we want our guests to experience in those unique finds as well.
Well, it just sounds fascinating. Like I said, it's been on my bucket list for a long, long time to check it out. Brenda Cantrell from the Unclaimed Baggage Center in Scottsboro, Alabama. Just real quickly, tell people where, what part of Alabama, and how do you get there? What's it near? The best description of how to get there.
Well, if you're ever in Atlanta or Nashville, Chattanooga, Knoxville, Birmingham, Montgomery, so we're really just kind of in the center of all of those areas. We're about 4 or 5 minutes east of Huntsville. Less than 3 hours from Atlanta. And so it's a great day trip if you're ever in, you know, the area for a business trip or for, you know, just a pleasure trip. It's a beautiful area to get in the car and drive and come see us.
Brenda, thank you so much for visiting with us this morning. As I said, this has been on my bucket list for a long time, and I cannot wait to stop by and say hello to you personally and visit the Unclaimed Baggage Center in Alabama.
Well, please do. I look forward to it.
All right, we're going to shift gears here to one of the guys that considered one of the luckiest people on television in the world of travel. That would be Phil Kogan, because he has the dream job of being host of The Amazing Race. But he's got a brand new project that discovers his native country of New Zealand. It's on the Smithsonian Channel. It's called Flying High with Phil Kogan. And Phil, tell us about this amazing project you're working on.
Well, as you said, I have been lucky enough to travel for many, many years. I took my first trip overseas from New Zealand, where I was born, at the age of three, and I have been traveling around the world ever since. My parents really gave me the travel bug, if you like. And then, of course, in my career, over the last 30 years, I've been lucky enough to work on a lot of shows that involve travel, and that includes The Amazing Race. And if there's anything I've learned from all these years of travel, it's that places, countries, they're about people. They're not about the landscapes. It's obviously nice to go to beautiful places like New Zealand or Switzerland, or here in the United States, we have some incredible landscapes, some great places to visit. But ultimately, people's experiences are about the people that they meet wherever they go. And so I wanted to do a show that is, in a way, a chat show on the road, where I meet interesting people who epitomize the personality of a particular country, and rather than have them come and sit on a couch in a studio and talk with me in a traditional talk show environment, I would go to them, maybe sit on their couch and talk to them in their environment where they're most comfortable. And I chose New Zealand because I'm from New Zealand, and I picked about a dozen people who I think epitomize the personality of New Zealand. And that's what led me to shooting this show.
Okay, so each week, this is a weekly series on the Smithsonian Channel. Each week we visit with somebody else, or is it all mixed in together?
So the idea is that I would choose a different country every week, and each episode would be a different country. And in each of those different countries, about a dozen people who I believe epitomize the personality of that country. Now, obviously, if I was going to do a show in America, I wouldn't be able to just take 12 people to represent all of America, because it's just such a big, diverse population. So I would probably be looking at doing the United States state by state, because obviously people from Texas are so much different from the people of Oregon. But in a country like New Zealand, where you've got just over 4 million people, it's a country about the size of Japan or Great Britain. I have picked 12 people from New Zealand, everyone from Sam Neill, who is not only a great actor but also owns a vineyard and makes beautiful Pinot Noir grapes, to Peter Jackson, who not only is a great Academy Award-winning director but also has an incredible collection of World War One planes, to my dad, to some comedians from New Zealand. People who epitomize the personality of New Zealand, innovative, resourceful people. And those people, I hope, will then give people, the audience, a good sense of, well, what are New Zealanders like? What's their sense of humor like? What is it that's important to them? I've even got a farmer who rounds up sheep with a drone. But the idea is that if you watch this episode, you have a pretty good sense of what New Zealanders, plural, are like. And that if you planned a trip on Monday and you flew to New Zealand and you got in a cab and you met your first New Zealander face to face, that you would already have a good sense of what this person was about, what is important to them, what their sensibilities are like, what their humor is like. And that's what we've set out to do here with the show.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about some of the specific people because I have a list on them, and it's kind of funny because the first question I was going to ask you, you answered it. Does the geography of New Zealand make it special, or does the people make it special? And you answered that so eloquently. It's really the people that make it special, though the geography in New Zealand is stunning and unique to that area too. So, I mean, you add all that together, and it really makes it a place that that is on top of my bucket list of somewhere I want to visit.
If you imagine what people think of when they think of New Zealand generally is beautiful landscapes. They think of maybe sheep. They think of beautiful mountains. It is a country of extremes. There's a reason that Peter Jackson shot Lord of the Rings in New Zealand. None of those landscapes were digitally made. Those are real mountains. Those mountains, the Remarkable Mountains, the Southern Alps, all those locations you saw, they are all very real. But what I wanted to do with this series was bring the people to the foreground and have those beautiful vistas as the background. So I'm not saying that, you know, we're not celebrating the beautiful landscapes of New Zealand. I just wanted to say to people, look, you know New Zealand for its landscapes, and maybe you've heard of the, you know, the fact that we have a lot of sheep. But there's so much more to New Zealand than that. I want to introduce you to the people, the innovative people who have a great sense of humor, who really make a place what it is. Because if there's one thing I've learned, it's that countries are not about the beautiful vistas. They are about the people. It's the experience of the people, the experiences that you have with the people wherever you go that make it what it is. That's what I wanted to get across. It's interesting. Tourism New Zealand did an exercise with their staff a few years ago where they took a photograph of the Swiss Alps, a photograph of the Massifs down in Argentina, and they also took some shots of the area in and around Banff and then some mountains in New Zealand. And they showed the four photographs, and they said, okay, name the country that these photographs were taken in. And they could not separate New Zealand from the in those photographs. They couldn't actually clearly identify which one was in New Zealand. The point being, there's lots of beautiful mountains in many countries around the world. There are lots of beautiful places all over the world. But what separates Banff from Switzerland, from Argentina and New Zealand are the people who live there and the way that they live. And certainly our landscape has had an influence on the personalities of our personalities, because we are a country of extremes, a country of fire and ice and extreme climates. It's definitely had an effect on the personality. But again, it's not about the mountains. That's not what makes New Zealand what it is. What makes New Zealand what it is are the people.
Okay, so there's one person I wanted to talk to about on your list, because I've read a lot about extreme sports and how New Zealand is really, some consider it the birthplace of extreme sports. And one of the persons you have on this show is Henry Van Osch. Am I pronouncing his last name correctly?
Yeah, pretty close. Henry Van Esch, yeah.
And Van Esch. And he is like the guy that started bungee jumping.
Yeah, well, I first met Henry Van Esch more than 30 years ago in Queenstown. Queenstown, New Zealand has been called the adventure capital of the world. I believe there's more adventures packed into that one small place than anywhere else in the world. It's pretty amazing. And when I first met Henry, he was New Zealand downhill and mountain biking champion, and he was living out of a Volkswagen van. He was all about extreme sports. Well, he teamed up with a guy by the name of AJ Hackett back in the late 80s, and they had seen this activity in Vanuatu where people tied themselves to vines. A tradition in a little Pacific island in Vanuatu where they tied themselves to vines, and they would jump off these precarious wooden structures as a way of proving their manhood, and it literally vines from the forest and take these death-defying leaps off these precarious structures and somehow survive. And they thought, wow, that's pretty cool. I just don't know if we could convince people to tie themselves to vines. Maybe we should find something a little safer and more reliable. So they came up with this with these bungee cords, a whole bunch of tiny rubber bands all bound together.
Yes, it's ridiculous.
which is insane. And then as a way to sort of create some publicity, A.J. Hackett made an illegal jump from the inside of the Eiffel Tower to impress a French model that he really liked, Caroline. And when he made that leap, it was filmed and the footage was shared all around the world, this illegal jump that they made. But what it did was overnight, it suddenly got everybody's attention. Everybody wanted to start doing it. And so they were the first to start what we now know as commercial bungee jumping, tied to where you leap off a perfectly safe structure tied to a rubber band. Now, I jumped with Henry back in 1988 when they first opened up. I was one of the first people to jump. And I remember everybody saying how crazy we were. Mm-hmm. But really, it's not really that dangerous. It's more perceived danger. Yeah. They've never had any incident, and they do it very safely. But yeah, Henry Van Ness, an awesome guy, a visionary guy, lives down in Queenstown. He's not living out of a Volkswagen van anymore, but lives quite a different life. But we became good friends, and over the years, we've actually broken a couple of unofficial world records, leaping off a bridge. Nine of us leapt off the bridge at the same time, off the original bridge where they started commercial bungee jumping in 1988. So, yeah, he's an awesome guy, and what you realize is that bungee jumping is not so much dangerous as it's just a very difficult mental leap for a lot of people to make because you are jumping off a perfectly safe bridge.
And you touched on this.
Whatever structure.
And you touched on this. Really, a lot of these extreme sports really kind of got their foothold in New Zealand. There's a great film called Last Paradise. I don't know if you've ever seen it, about extreme sports and how they got started in New Zealand. And that's how I kind of got introduced to that myself, and I've been fascinated with it. And so I was kind of interested to see that that's one of the aspects you have.
One of the things I tried to do was to show, I have Peter Jackson as a guest, and I have Sam Neill as a guest. And what I tried to do was to talk to them about things that people haven't seen them talk about before. So we go to Sam Neill's vineyard. Sam Neill, famous actor who was in Jurassic Park. He's been in Peaky Blinders recently, an award-winning actor. But everybody asks him about his films. And everybody asks him about the stuff he does in his daytime career. Same with Peter Jackson. He's talked to death about Lord of the Rings, and he's always talking about his movies, whether it's King Kong or whatever. I wanted to talk to him about something that he doesn't normally talk about, which is his World War One plane collection. And so he turns down probably 99% of the interviews he gets requested to do. And he does press when he has to because it's based on his movies. But he gave us a special insight into his passion for World War One planes. He has 70 of them. They all fly. He even took us for a flight in one. So I didn't ask him any questions about movies. He does bring it up himself. He brings up some stories, some fun stories. But again, what I wanted to do was make so-called ordinary people out of people like Sam Neill and Peter Jackson. And then with ordinary people like this farmer who rounds up sheep with a drone, I wanted to make him a celebrity. So the idea is, again, that it's a chat show, interesting people, captivating characters with great stories to share. But instead of them coming into a chat show and sitting down on a couch, I go and sit on their couch or go and chat to them where they live.
And there's also a gentleman by the name of Alan Gibbs who's in the show. Tell people what Alan, what his life is like, and his he seems rather eccentric.
Alan Gibbs is a very eccentric character. I mean, in New Zealand, we're the last habitable place on Earth to be populated. We're a very isolated country. My grandfather, I remember him telling stories about it being a mechanic. And when you live in New Zealand and you're so isolated from the rest of the world, particularly, when my grandfather was young, you couldn't just go down to the store and buy parts for fixing things or get what you wanted. So you had to make do, because if you did want something, you'd have to order it from America or England, and it would take months and months to arrive. So So most people in New Zealand would have a shed, and still do. A lot of people have sheds, and in the sheds are things that you use to make things, because you can't just go buy the part. You have to make the part. You have to be inventive. And Alan Gibbs sort of epitomizes that whole idea. So Alan Gibbs, he lives on a farm. As you said, quite an eccentric character. He made a lot of money setting up used car sales, shops all over with shops. I'm trying to think of what to say here. He sells used cars. He sold used cars and he made a lot of money. But he has a family farm, and he needed a way to get up the little inlet that comes to his farmlet. The water is very tidal and very shallow, and he needed a way to get a boat in and out of his farm. So he invented a car, which is called the Aquata, which is an amphibious car, which does 30 miles an hour on the water and 100 miles an hour on the road. Really groundbreaking, called the Aquata. And then he amassed a lot of money selling used cars, and he had, I guess what you could say, a dispensable income. So he decided that he would get the world's best artists to come to his property and erect these massive sculptures on his farm, beautiful farm, with these rolling green hillsides. And he got people like Richard Serra, the famous artist Richard Serra, Anish Kapoor, and a famous New Zealand artist by the name of Neil Dawson to come and make their biggest and best works on his property. And they're absolutely breathtaking. I mean, it will blow your mind. So we have these beautiful aerial shots over his farm of these massive structures that are on his farm as well. But yes, absolutely an eccentric, but somebody who is, you know, in New Zealand we have an expression, you can fix anything with a piece of number 8 wire, which is, you know, basically, you know, if your door breaks, you just use a piece of number 8 wire to tie the door to the car, or whatever it is that you've got a problem with, you can fix it with a piece of number 8 wire. Our culture is a very pioneering culture because we're such a young country. We're kind of like 200 years after America went through its pioneering stage. That's when we started. And so we're closer to that pioneering spirit, if you like, because we're so tucked away at the bottom of the world.
You know, and there's also some exploration of the natural world. You have two of the sheep shearing world champions, and your dad is also on the show, and he's a botanist. And I learned this just not too long ago, that like Hawaii, New Zealand is so isolated that there are no natural mammals other than bats, I think, in New Zealand. I mean, they don't, you know, horses, dogs, you know, wolves, none of that is natural to New Zealand. I mean, sheep had to be brought there. Everything, all the mammals were brought to New Zealand.
Yeah, we are a country which only had birds. That's how the country started, and that's why we had such amazing birds like the emu, which was this giant bird bigger than an ostrich, which is now extinct. But no mammals. They all got brought over. But that's why birds flourish there. And our native bird is a bird called the kiwi. And that's why we also had so many birds that did not fly. They were flightless because they didn't need to fly, because they didn't need to fly away from predators.
Oh, that's fascinating. I didn't even put that together. That is fascinating. Well, I cannot wait to see this. It's called Flying High with Phil Kogan. It premieres on the Smithsonian Channel. And I can't wait to see your other work. But I just want to thank you for bringing New Zealand to us Americans. It seems like a fascinating work. And just brought the spirit of that country to us. And I can't wait for others to experience it also.
Well, I really appreciate you taking an interest in the show. And like I said, I hope by the time people have watched this hour, they have a pretty good sense of what Kiwis are like. There's quite a bit of humor in the show. We have New Zealand's famed comedians in the show, and a walk around the garden with my dad. He's been a greeter on Amazing Race. And yeah, thank you again for letting me talk about this show and sharing it with your listeners.
Can I ask you one last question before I go about Peter Jackson and Sam Neill? And I wonder if you're familiar with this. They worked on a project. It was a fake documentary called Forgotten Silver, about a prank they pulled in New Zealand. Are you familiar with that film at all?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we touch on it in this special. But Peter Jackson combined his love of aviation and filmmaking and came up with this with this storyline about a man finding some footage that proved that a New Zealander flew before the Wright brothers.
Yes.
And it's a mockumentary, so it's a spoof. But it was so convincing that it freaked everybody out because they could not believe that this had happened. Of course, it didn't happen. It was just a spoof. But Peter did such an extraordinary job putting this thing together that a lot of people freaked out. They were like, what are you talking about? There's some New Zealander who flew before the Wright brothers. It is based a little bit there was an innovative New Zealand aviation pioneer by the name of Richard Pierce, who did fly around the time of the Wright brothers. But there's never been any conclusive proof that he flew before the Wright brothers, even though he did fly around that time. But what happened was Peter came up with some fake conclusive proof. And boy, did it stir people up in the aviation world.
Oh, yeah, I know. I've seen this movie, and it's called Forgotten Silver, and it's a masterwork. I mean, a lot of people in the United States don't know about this movie. As I mentioned, I heard that it caused a big stir in New Zealand. I bet everybody knows about it there. But, yeah, I heard it aired on like a public television-type outlet, and people thought it was a real documentary and thought that there really was a New Zealander with documented film proof flying before the Wright brothers.
Yeah, it caused such a stir. People, I think, were annoyed that they were fooled by Peter Jackson's brilliance in filmmaking. And I think they were kind of annoyed with themselves, you know, annoyed that he fooled them. So then they sort of lashed out. They were like, well, this is terrible. You shouldn't be messing with people's heads like this. Because, you know, for a few days, people were walking around going, wow, can you believe there was a New Zealander that flew before the Wright brothers? Wow, this is crazy. So, well, I tell that story in this piece, and you'll see some of the footage that he created to mock this, to make this mockumentary.
Well, so once again, I want everybody to watch Flying High with Phil Kogan on the Smithsonian Channel, and then when that's done, go check out Forgotten Silver. You can find that online. You can find that on YouTube and rent it off there, and it'll be a perfect companion piece to Flying High with Phil Kogan.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right, that wraps up episode 22 of Travel with Hawkeye. Special thanks to Phil Kogan and his new program, Flying High with Phil Kogan on the Smithsonian Channel. And big thanks to Brenda Cantrell from the Unclaimed Baggage Center. Make that on your travel bucket list. I'm Mark Hawkeye Lewis. For everybody who's been a part of our show here, our entire staff, we want to thank you for making us a part of your day and a part of your podcast experience. And remember, the world is out there. Your adventure awaits. This has been the Travel with Hawkeye podcast.